City. It's your man, Big Pat, the voice of your Charlotte Hornets, and you're listening to the All Hornets Podcast Network, presented by Sports Illustrated.
All Hornets listeners, very exciting announcement before the start of this podcast. The All Hornets Podcast has been nominated for Best Team Podcast by the Sports Podcast Awards. These are the kind of premier sporting podcast awards in the industry, and we are one of only two independents up against 12 other team podcasts from across a range of sports in different countries. We absolutely need your help because it's a public vote. So please support us if you enjoy listening to the show. Some of these podcasts have massive leadership listenerships. So if you listen to this, we need every single one of you to help vote for us. And Chase is going to tell you exactly how you can do that right now.
So listeners, you are the reason that we are here and we are able to be eligible for awards like this. And you are going to be the reason why we win an award like this. You go to sportspodcastgroup.com/sports_category. You find the best team podcast category. You're going to register on that website, sign up for an account because you have to be logged in to vote. And then you're going to vote for All Hornets Podcast Network, the bottom left of the two columns there. I mean, we're up against Talking Giants from John Boy Media, probably the most popular New York Giants podcast on the market. A couple of podcasts from The Athletic, CLNS Media about the Boston Celtics. There's so many big networks that we're up against here. And it's just me and James and a couple other people at Sports Illustrated running the show here. So to us, this is a great achievement already. But if you guys are able to boost us up here, get us this victory, it would mean the world to me and James. Thank you all for listening, and if you go vote, thank you again. Thank you even more. So we appreciate you all.
Welcome to Inside the Hive. Joining me, as he does every week, is Chase Whitney. Chase, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. It is mid-March. It is snowing here outside of my house, but that is okay. We'll get over it. I'm doing well. We're rounding out the regular season here. It's coming to a close pretty quickly.
You know what? You know what we won't get over? Mark Williams injury. Damn, no. That sucked.
No, that was unfortunate.
That was a real shame. That was.
Was it not like the most predictable thing though that we'd be enjoying something for like a month and then it would be taken away from us?
Yeah, you can't have good things. What are you talking about?
No, we've known that for years, much less like this year specifically. So
absolutely. Well, thanks for joining me, Chase. On this week's podcast, we are having Marlon Garnett, Hornets assistant coach, is joining the podcast. He did a kind of a good 20-so minute interview, which will be towards the latter end of this podcast. So make sure you stay on and listen to the Marlon Garnett interview. It's really interesting. Talk about the Hornets defensive surge. He's the specific assistant coach allocated to LaMelo Ball. So talked a little bit about his development and also Kai Jones too. So it was a really interesting discussion with Marlon. But before we get into that, we're going to talk a little bit stock up, stock down with some of the Hornets young players. But first, Chase, I have to say I love this time of year because it is a four-hour time difference between Hornets games starting. So it was 11 o'clock started the night. I mean, it was just wonderful over here. So I'm very much enjoying the time change. I don't know how long. I think it changes in a couple of weeks, but I'm going to enjoy it while I can.
Well, you'll be happy to know that you might not be getting any of these five-hour time differences for NBA games next year. U.S. is no longer doing daylight saving time. So we sprung forward like last Sunday, and then we're springing forward forever. So you might have a four-hour time difference for most of these Hornets games coming up here.
Sorry, what do you mean they're not doing daylight save? How can you not do a time? I don't understand.
This is way above my pay grade as well. I don't really understand it either, because you'd think that if you started doing it however many hundreds of years ago, so the farmers didn't have to get up and farm in the dark in the morning, that you would just have to do it forever. But apparently that's not going to be a thing anymore, and they're just going to keep it in whatever time frame schedule that we're at now, so in March.
So you're saying that next clocks forward. That means that next season, when the clocks change in the UK in October, that the US will be only 4 hours behind for me for the East Coast. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, because we are the US daylight saving time is like early March and early November. The one in early November is just not going to happen, I'm pretty sure. So,
oh my God.
We've sprung forward for all of eternity.
For someone like me, I can't believe this has actually happened. Who can change time?
Apparently, just the U.S. government can just decide.
Wow. Joe Biden, my president.
Yeah, for real.
thank you, Joe. I'm big fan of 4-hour time difference. If that's the case for next year, that makes my life a lot easier. So, well, that is positive news I was not expecting. I'll have to wait for next year to get to reap the benefits of that. But let's not get too sidetracked about the time just changing in the US. let's talk a little stock up, stock down. Chase, I put to you to come up with three prospects that you wanted to talk about. Stock up, stock down. Aren't prospects on the roster, I should say. We've not done a little check-in here on some of the Hornets young players in a little while. So, yeah, I'm going to hand over to you. Who do you want to talk about first?
All right. Do you want me to list all three of them off and you can pick one, or do you just want me to rip one off first and we can
You rip off. Go on. You can, yeah, rip one off.
All right. So I'm going to go with JT Thor. I feel like of all the players on the Hornets this year, he has been someone we've maybe talked about, probably not the least, but definitely less than
with the most consistent playing time. Right. He's always playing, basically.
Right. Especially of the group of like him and Kai and Booknight, the 2021 draftees, he's easily played the most out of them three. And over this last recent stretch, he's been pretty good. I mean, obviously we know what type of defensive player he is, just like a long, versatile, mobile forward that has actually gotten a little bit of small ball center minutes. I don't remember if it was against Detroit or another team.
There was a bit of foul trouble, wasn't there? I think so.
And he ended up playing the five for a little bit, which was actually pretty cool. It's not something we've seen him do a whole lot in his career. But the three ball looks a little bit better over the last couple games as well. That's always been something that you kind of look at him and be like, oh, he looks like really comfortable taking that shot. It looks like something that's eventually going to start going in for him. Maybe that time is now. I mean, he's been shooting it a little bit better than his career percentage over the last five games. Obviously it still looks comfortable like it always does. He just seems like he's settling in a lot more recently. So 37.5% from three in the last five games. So
I'll go one better than that. Over the last 18 games since February 1st, he's 43% from the corners.
Ooh, okay. Here we go. And that's a location that's going to be really important for a player like him too. So,
well, it is, especially considering that he hasn't hit a non-corner three in that time also. So his corner 3% is 43%. His non-corner 3% is zero. And his overall three-point percentage during that time is 32%. So the corners are definitely JT's friends for right now. But that's definitely like, if you look at the trends, he started the year really cold, right?
Yeah.
But he's generally been trending upwards recently. And I feel like the game's just, it's not showing up massively in the statistics yet, but I do feel like the game is slowing down a little bit for him. Like the foul rate's going down. He's making some better positions with the basketball. He's even getting like some mid-range turnaround stuff, which like shows a level of comfort. Again, like the usage percentage is terrible. His rim percentage is 38%, which for like a 6'10", like massive wingspan guy is like ridiculously awful. But if you take away some of the statistics, because we know he's not a stat stuffer, I do feel like he is playing his role well and executing it to a better level, and the game is slowing down a little bit.
Absolutely. And I think that's probably been the reason he's been in the rotation, is because none of him, Kai, or Booknight, or really even Bryce McGowan's for a decent portion of the season have been impacting the game in like a box score stat. Like, it's not like any of them are going out there 10 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, a steal, and a block. But JT has been the one that has been able to impact the game positively without doing that. And for any low-minute player, you're probably not going to be stuffing the box score anytime you go out anyway, unless you're like some microwave scorer type, but the Hornets obviously don't have a player like that. So I think that's been what's kept JT in the rotation. He's just a very sound basketball player for somebody that hasn't been playing high level basketball like a ton of minutes in his career. He's been in the rotation the most out of the young players, perhaps, but not a ton comparatively for other young players.
If you said to us on draft night that out of James Bucknight, Kai Jones, JT Thor, and Scotty Lewis, that that JT Thor would be the guy who is most NBA ready to get rotation minutes. I mean, I don't know what the odds you're getting on there. He was viewed as like a pre-draft guy, a project guy, because he was like, people thought he was going to go back to school and he ended up coming out. Definitely a surprise there. One thing, like, what do you feel about his mid-range game? Because I like it personally. Like, he looks more comfortable when you watched him in the swarm last season. He's not played there much this year, but like the mid-range is where he was like most comfortable scoring the ball, like that turnaround. You know, he's got a really high release on his shot. I know it doesn't fit well into a role player archetype, but I actually would like to see him try and kind of drive to get to that mid-range area more and just pull up.
I remember coming out of Auburn, that was like the selling point with JT Thor, was like big, mobile four that has way more off the dribble, like pull-up jumper juice than you would think just by looking at him. On two-point jump shots, in his Auburn career, he was 18 for 50, which is only 36%, but only 22% of those attempts were assisted. Extremely low number. Like, four out of every five jump shots he's taking from inside the arc, essentially, were like self-created pull-ups. And for a freshman in the SEC, that's a pretty good number. And that seems to be kind of showing itself now as he really like establishes himself as an NBA player and gets used to being at that like higher level of competition and physicality and stuff and working with that. I'm definitely a big fan of him kind of testing the waters with that and seeing where he can go. Cause if he can not only knock down threes consistently, but like attack a closeout,
hit
a couple three dribbles, like into the middle of the paint, hit a nice little floater, like jumper leaner type thing, that adds like a whole new layer to his game and makes it so he's much more of like an offensively potent four rather than someone who's more of just like a versatile defender type that hits open threes.
I completely agree. I think the area that he still needs to work on is the three dribbles into the paint, which sounds really simple.
Yeah, right. But it's very much not. Like,
especially for JT Thor at the minute, like any form of contact, it can be from like a 6'1" guard, like, and JT like picks up his dribble and passes it out. Like, he is so like still like narrow and thin. He's still definitely growing into his frame. He has like quite a high dribble. That's the issue for me. It's like, it's not the mid-range shot. It's actually getting to a point where he can be comfortable and set to be able to get that shot away. And the good news is like ball handling is one of the things that guys can work on like in the off season, every single day out. It's not a guarantee, but it is one of those skills that generally does improve as people get into the league.
All right, who do we want to bounce up to next with stock up, stock down? I don't know if we ever even actually said it, but obviously JT Thor, stock up.
Stock up. Like not soaring, but like steadily
rising,
reliably increasing. Okay, it's like a steady stock, like a 6 out of 10 on the risk register. Like it started a little bit rocky, but it's inching up.
All right, where are we going next? I had one more young player left, and then a veteran here that we could talk about.
Let's go vet.
All right, let's talk about Kelly Oubre. Returned from injury late in February, has played every game since then except for the first game against Cleveland. And then in that stretch has had one game of lower than scoring less than 15 points. He has four games where he scored more than 25 points. Pretty much right back to what he was doing before he was injured, being one of the most reliable forms of offense and consistent scorers on the team. Obviously, the efficiency can range from being pretty poor to really good, like when he goes 10 for 17, 3 for 6 from 3, 4 for 4 of the line, scores 27 points in a 9-game win streak, or as they snapped the New York Knicks, 9-game win streak. And then you can go 5 for 15, 0 for 4 from 3, like he did against Brooklyn the game before that. So what were you thinking about Kelly Oubre? To me, his stock is going up just inherently because when they didn't have him, that one option, that reliable option, is just gone. And then he comes back, pretty much picked up right where he left off. So what about you?
Definitely up. I mean, how many times do we talk about players who come back from injury? And for especially like a long layoff, for a month, we're saying, well, you know, he's still getting his legs under him and he's still getting, you know, back into game shape. And we use all those things. And Kelly Oubre just came back from like day one and was like, yep, I'm good. Like, it was like he had never left the lineup. And he's been remarkably consistent. He's not been playing almost like at all with LaMelo Ball, basically, yeah, because of the way the injuries have like flip-flopped this year, which, you know, means that a lot of his shots are unassisted. And he's still doing the same stuff we saw earlier in the year, like getting downhill, not settling for threes. The big thing since the injuries come back, like we wondered, right, did that hand injury impact his three-point shooting percentage? Since he's been back, he's 41% from three. Before that, he was 31% from three before the injury. Now, that could just be a hot streak. It could be that he's fresh because he wasn't been playing in a period of time. It could just be small sample size theater. But if that keeps up between now and the end of the season, you know, even if it's in the 37, 38 range, that's without LaMelo Ball, remember, generating those high-quality shot attempts. I think that really shows that that injury might have had an impact on Kelly's shooting this year, which in that case, if you're adding like the, I don't know, some element of like the three-point shooting from last year into the kind of downhill aggressive driver that he is this year and with the kind of active defense, I'd say that like that is a really intriguing player. It's basically adding the best of both worlds. So I agree. Definitely Kelly stock up. Austin Leak for All Hornets just wrote an article about re-signing Kelly Oubre, and he's definitely a fan, and he talked a little bit in his piece about why the Charlotte Hornets should prioritize re-signing him this offseason. So make sure you go read that out if you're torn on the Kelly Oubre thing and you're not sure. You know, go make sure you go read Austin Leak, All Hornets website, why the Charlotte Hornets should re-sign Kelly Oubre. But yeah, I've been really impressed. Nothing but good things to say since he's come back.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would have to imagine some competitor, like playoff team, is kind of kicking themselves right now for not trading a late first or a couple early seconds or future seconds for Kelly Oubre at the deadline. And I remember when he first got hurt, we were talking about, like, do we think this is going to make it like harder for him to get traded? And I think both of us landed on the end of like, this actually might make it easier, because if he has the surgery and he becomes back as a better shooter, then you can just point to his inefficiencies in the first half and be like, obviously that was the problem. Now he's much better. The injury's healed and he can play. And he's shooting 41% from three, 22.9 points and 6.6 rebounds per game, 46% from the field, 94.9% from the line on 4.9 attempts per game since he came back. He's really just affected the game offensively in every way. Like, he's not as much of a passer, obviously, but he's still gotten tons of reps as like a pick and roll ball handler. And he's not turning the ball over very much either, which a lot of people may have thought would happen if Kelly Oubre had a ton of like on ball reps, and hasn't. So there's literally nothing really to complain about with him so far. He has come back, and took him one game to get back in the swing of things, and he's put up four games of 25 plus since then. So
no, absolutely right. I mean, the thing that people don't talk about, and it's something that Marlon Garner actually mentioned in our part of the podcast we've got coming up here, is about getting to the line. Kelly Oubre is like, for the perimeter players, is one of the best guys on the team of basically getting to the free throw line. His and one percentage, 34.8%, is in the 83rd percentile for wings. That leads the team for anyone who isn't a big, and bigs just generally get fouled more. It's basically how it goes. I think Kelly's had a really good year here, and I really wouldn't be surprised when Mitch Kupchak said, we want to look at re-signing some of the veterans. Kelly Oubre isn't one of the guys who they look at this offseason. Now, we have to remember the other things here, right? Miles Bridges, elephant still in the room, plays some small forward, could play small forward under Steve Clifford. If so, could affect Kelly Oubre. Where they land in the draft, if they end up with a Brandon Miller, if they end up with a Osar Thompson, like, probably going to fill some of the Kelly Oubre minutes role. Whether they feel he's ready or not, I don't know. But there are ways that I think the offseason could break that maybe it looks less likely when we get to July 1. But sitting here right now, knowing what we know, I think it's pretty clear that Kelly Oubre add something to this team would be a really good sixth man for an offense that has struggled this year and has shown some really nice development while in Charlotte. And most importantly, he actually wants to be here, which was one of those things that, like, for any free agent in Charlotte, we shouldn't take notice of that when it's been said.
All right, we're gonna move on. Last player here. Do you want to take a gander at who it might be? I guess I already gave you a hint by saying it was a younger player, but
well, it wouldn't be the All Hornets podcast. I mean, it wouldn't be Chase if it wasn't Bryce McGowan's.
You're absolutely right, Bryce McGowan's. But I don't know. I actually deliberated over this for a long time, and it hurts me. I might have to say stock down here.
You're right to say that.
The grand scheme of things, but certainly in just the what have you done for me lately perspective. This is the rookie wall, I think, for Bryce McGowan's. He's been pretty much like the consistently 15 minutes or 10 minutes in the rotation a game, and he has been very inefficient. He has not scored more than 5 points in a game since February. He has made 2 3-pointers in the month of March. Not that it's on super high volume or anything, but still, it just has not really had the same level of just putting the ball in the basket really that he had at the beginning of the year. That was something that was kind of his strength, was whenever he would play, he would get off the bench, he would score a little bit, and you'd be able to sit him back down and know that he at least didn't shoot you out of the game or something. And not that he's doing it now, but definitely a bit of a drop off in efficiency here lately for my man Bryce McGowan's, but it will turn around. Don't you worry.
Yeah, I agree. I have to be honest. I've been really, I don't want to say disappointed. Going down the stretch of the season here, Bryce McGowan's one of the guys I thought he could have a really good stretch with the opportunity with minutes. And we could see kind of a little bit of a Bryce McGowan's breakout. It hasn't been that. If anything, it's been the opposite. You know, the flashes he showed earlier in the season were more promising than what he showed. I feel like, I mean, Steve Clifford even said, I think he hit the rookie wall a little bit. And then he said that we were in a pregame. And then someone asked Bryce McGowan, do you think you hit the rookie wall? And he was like, no. So, which I get, right? You know, young players especially don't always like want to show weakness, right? They want to say that they're always ready, everything like that, which I don't blame Bryce for saying that, but I think you're right. I think he has. The thing for me is he's just become a lot more passive, and I think he's trying to play a role, which I appreciate, because you look at the Nebraska film, he was like inefficient volume chucker, like never saw a shot that he didn't like, was like one of the scouting notes I had for him. And now he's far from that. So I give him a lot of credit for being able to like be versatile and changing how he approaches the game, which I think shows really promising things for him in terms of like being a role player. You look at some guys who maybe struggled more for playing time, like James Bucknight. He kind of looks very much like the same whenever you've seen him. You're not seeing a necessary change in how he approaches the game. Bryce, you've definitely seen that. But like, he is a scorer. He's never going to be a lockdown defender. And if Bryce isn't scoring, then he's not a fantastic passer. He's not a great defender. That's where his value is. And I would like to see him just try and be a little bit more aggressive, attacking the rim, looking for a step back. He's still got a good foul rate, which is the positive thing, which is one of the only kind of things that's really looking good if you look at the stats. But yeah, he's gone from someone who was flashing like, ooh, look at the numbers, he could be really exciting, to now you look at the numbers and you're like, eh, which I think is more complicated than that. I don't think the numbers are everything, but it's made me rethink that, okay, maybe he won't just like be automatically ready for rotation minutes next year, which earlier in the season, that's how I kind of felt it was going to go.
Yeah. And the one thing that I have definitely noticed so far is that he, even though he's not necessarily finishing at a high rate, he does get to the rim a lot still, which I think is a good sign. Like that, his first step, the ball handling, coming out of Nebraska, I thought his ball handling was like super impressive, especially for a guy that was 6'7" and pretty thin. But he's in the 90th percentile in rim attempt frequency. 45% of his 102 field goal attempts have come at the rim this year. So that's definitely a positive sign to see that he can still like get around his defenders and get to the rim. The finishing, I think, will come in time, especially as he bulks up a little bit. But this is something that I was kind of surprised about to see when I was researching for this podcast. He's still played fewer minutes this season than Teo Maledon. Bryce is at 443 total minutes. Teo was at 528. So even though he's been in the rotation for probably 2 or 3 weeks now, he still hasn't played like all that much this season. And he's only a rookie. So, I mean, of course, like he's has not been nearly as good as he was earlier in the year, even like a month ago, but still hasn't played a ton either. So I'm sure part of it is just him getting used to the NBA more so than, you know, a certain skill deficiency or anything like that. But I actually have a surprise for you because I want to add one more quick player to this. And I'm also going to make my own category. It's called Stock Up, but it might be going down if we get another bad game or two. Do you want to take a guess at who this is?
Kai Jones?
No, actually it is one Gordon Hayward, who was playing extremely well until the last three games. He had a 2-point outing against Detroit, and then he had a pretty good game against Cleveland the first time out, but had a really, really good stretch there for going for a while. In the last 13 games, he's averaging 17 points a game, shooting 51, 41, and 78 or 77 as his shooting splits, with 4.7 rebounds and a 2-to-1 assist to turnover ratio. Pretty much all you'd want out of a guy that's like shouldering the more responsibility with LaMelo out and is essentially your like second point guard on the team after the Terry Rozier, Dennis Smith combination. But I think most people would probably agree with Gordon Hayward being a better playmaker, or at least a more consistently reliable, like offensive initiator, guy you can hand the ball to and, you know, rely on him to distribute it around to his teammates and get everybody involved than either Terry or Dennis. Fortunately, he's had a couple lackluster games here, especially that season low 2-point game against Detroit, shot 1-for-9. But I mean, he's been super efficient, scoring like nearly 20 points a game, 5 assists. It's really all you kind of need from some guy that a lot of people have had just kind of written off as a contributor and somebody that wasn't going to be able to provide value or lead this team to like play winning basketball. But I mean, he scored 27, 21, and then had 19 and 6 in 3 wins over Minnesota, Miami, and Detroit. He had 26 in a win over Atlanta, 23, 9 and 8 in a win over the Knicks that snapped their streak. It's all been going pretty well for Gordon Hayward recently. So hopefully this, rough-ish stretch anyway that he hit here in the last couple games can turn itself around before this Cleveland back-to-back ends.
Chase, I just want to say bravo to you right there, because I just had like a mic meltdown and I was issuing you to keep going, and you did a sterling job.
I hope the listeners
there was wires coming out, was all sorts going on there, and you'd never have known. You never even broke stride, but I'm unveiling the curtain here to tell people. Gordon, he looked fresh, right? He looked sprightly.
Yes. He's dunking a lot more than usual.
He was, and I think that just comes to like he was feeling a little bit more healthy. I think that's what it comes down to. You can really tell when Gordon is when he's feeling that kind of healthy side of it. And I think he said as much in one of the post games. I heard him say like he was playing earlier in the year, but it was clear that he was not 100%. I think he's been playing better as of late, and it would be nice for him to be able to like finish the season playing basketball, because that hasn't happened in the last, 2 years. So that would be a positive thing. Overall, I've got a word which I'm going to describe the Hornets as since LaMelo's injury, and I think it's the perfect word. I thought about this today. They've been spunky. Do you not think? They've been the spunky Hornets. Like, they've been trying their best. They've been in games, overmatched, but like doing kind of like playing hard. Like, you can't watch the games like it was earlier in the season. You're pulling your hair out. You can't really do that at the minute.
That is like the perfect word to describe this current iteration of the Hornets. This is like the fourth time I've mentioned it. The end of the Knicks win streak, which to me, that is so good. Like, as a team that's like, you know, one of the four worst in the league, like what kind of things can you do to kind of boost yourself and give yourself some momentum other than that? Like, that is perfect. You walk into their arena, end this 9-game win streak that had their fans riding higher than they've ridden in the last probably 20 years. It just feels so good to do stuff like that. But I mean, even down the stretch here, like they've played, like the defense has been so much better. Everybody has been playing with like so much effort. It's just been really great to see like nobody kind of faltering when a lot of teams would or could or have just kind of mailed it in at this point in the season.
Absolutely. And I think that just goes to show some of the character of the team. It's got strong leadership. There is a culture there. And I think earlier in the year, right, we were probably, a lot of fans were questioning those sort of things with the manner of some of the losses, the inability to deal with setbacks. And it really feels like the team have grown up a lot, even though like you look at the record, most majority, 99% of people will look at the record and just go, the Hornets suck that year. But it does feel like you can point to some areas of progress in the last kind of like third of the season here. When LaMelo Ball was playing, I think they were 9-9 in the last 18 games, I want to say, when they had LaMelo in the lineup. There are little things that I think at least you can point to and pull at. And hopefully there are some more here going down the stretch of the season to think that, you know, there is some reason for optimism for next year, irrelevant of where they end up drafting.
All right. What do we got? We got anything else to delve into here?
No, I think we're going to listen to our sponsors from DraftKings.
True.
Then we're going to hear from Marlon Garnett. But before we do, Chase, give people, do you have a final four or a pick for national championship for March?
Ooh, all right. I'll give my champion, and my final four is Houston, Alabama, UConn, and Marquette. I believe the matchups would be reversed right there. It'd be Marquette and Alabama, and then Houston and UConn. I have Alabama winning it over Houston in the national championship. Those are probably the two best college teams all year. It's really hard, especially Houston. It's really hard to bet against teams that have a perfect mix of veterans, like older college players, and like really high level freshmen that can play in the NBA. My rule is you cannot pick a national championship or national champion that doesn't have a future NBA player on the team. That is a very important part of like being a transcendent college basketball team. Very rarely do teams win at all without having future NBA players on the team, even like mid-major squads that make a run. That's one of probably my biggest piece of advice for anybody making a bracket. Don't pick a team that doesn't have a future NBA player. But other than that, I'm just super excited for March to get going here. The Hornets fans, once again, have a lot of vested interest in how some of these players play. Trying to think. Jairus Walker, Brandon Miller, Nick Smith, Keyonte George. Those are probably the four players for any Hornets fan that's thinking, hey, our team isn't very good right now. I haven't watched a ton of college basketball. Like, what March Madness games or players should I be watching for? I would say any of those four guys would be it.
I agree. I've not even looked at the bracket yet. It's on my to-do list. So I'm just going to bail out and not give predictions here. But Chase has got you covered there. Right, let's take a break. Hear from our friends from DraftKings. NBA fans, it's time to bring the hoops action to the palm of your hands with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. This week, new customers can bet $5 and win $200 in free bets in bonus bets instantly. Plus, for a limited time, all new and the existing customers get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day. Go to the DraftKings Sportsbook app today, opt in, and place a same-game parlay on any NBA game. And if it doesn't hit, you'll get your bonus bet back. So, one bet I'm looking out for is the Hornets against the Suns. Kevin Durant's first game back. Everyone's going to juice the Suns. Everyone's going to juice Kevin Durant overs. I'm going for Kevin Durant unders. I also think the Hornets might cover that game. Be the first time with Phoenix playing with a lot of their new team. First time with Kevin Durant. He'll probably be on a minutes limit. He'll be a bit rusty. So I'm pairing Kevin Durant with Hornets unders for my same game parlay. So to bet, download the app now and sign up with code TBPN. New customers can bet $5 on the NBA and get $200 in free bets instantly. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. with code TBPN. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See the show notes for details. Joining us now on the All Hornets podcast is Hornets assistant coach Marlon Garnett, who's just finished up with practice. Coach, how are the guys looking?
Looking really good. I think they're locked in. You know, obviously this is kind of a, you know, playoff setting when you play that back to back against the same team. So you're able to look at the film and see what adjustments you can make. So I think we got a pretty good game plan going into tonight's game and see if we can actually come out with a win. Thought we played pretty good in the first game, so see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to touch on kind of a wide range of topics here. But we're going to start with the really, really important stuff. That according to your Wikipedia, your nickname is Money G. So we want to know if that's real or if one of your friends is stitching you up there.
Can we argue if that's the more important stuff? but yeah, it is a real thing. It was a nickname that was given to me by my brother, and I actually have a tattoo of it, so that makes it permanent and real in my head. I've always had a knack of like having good feel and good touch shooting the basketball. So he said it was like money in the bank when I shot it, and that became like my inner circle name that a lot of people use. And it's interesting that most of the teams that I've gotten to, people just got comfortable calling me money. Even back when I was in Atlanta, actually had Nate McMillan calling me money, and to this day, that's what he calls me. So I respond to it. It's a name that, you know, I don't mind people using, so it's all good.
That's a great backstory to a nickname, because it's got positive connotations, right? Because that's what everyone said about you, which is really good. I'm curious, are there other nicknames that you can share on the Hornets team amongst coaches or players that any fans might not hear about or know about at all that you can think of?
I don't know of the ones. I do believe that there are some. I think the players kind of say it amongst themselves.
Feathers.
You know, I try to keep it professional and call them by, you know, their first name or their last name. Sometimes I'll even dress them with a mister. So I'm not sure, but I'm sure there's a lot of nicknames that are out there.
So you've had a lot of places that you've been to in your career, multiple stops as a coach, as a player as well. Mm-hmm. What made you want to go to the Hornets specifically after you departed from Atlanta? Was there anything appealing about the organization or the franchise?
Yeah, I mean, a number of reasons. Originally from Los Angeles, but my wife and I decided to kind of do a lifestyle change. And back in 2007, we moved to Charlotte. So Charlotte had been home base since then. And, you know, I had other stops. I was in San Antonio, I was in Phoenix, and most recently before coming here in Atlanta. But upon moving here, I was still in my playing career, but I always thought, how neat would it be, you know, to coach in the city that we kind of made home base. So it was kind of a personal reason to want to get back here to Charlotte and be in, you know, in the city that I call home now. Another reason was Coach Borrego, who I worked with when I was in San Antonio. And when Coach Norad left and they had that opening, he reached out and, you know, we spoke, and I just found it intriguing opportunity to come, being that it was going to be a elevated coaching role and coaching responsibilities to leave Atlanta. Interestingly enough, I actually had signed an extension in Atlanta prior to talking to Hornets, and, you know, ended up coming here. And the last reason was that made it like really interesting is the opportunity and the chance to get to, you know, try to impact LaMelo with his development, you know, a young up and coming kind of rising star. So that opened my eyes to make the jump, make the leap.
Well, that's a great segue, Marlon, onto our next topic, which I was going to speak to you about LaMelo, because you are LaMelo's kind of allocated assistant coach, and I know you do a lot of work with him. In terms of when we saw LaMelo on the court this year, what were the biggest areas of growth that you saw from him kind of compared to his first year and previous years in Charlotte?
So most importantly, the one that sticks out the most that we really emphasize going into this second year is basically just kind of slowing him down. We wanted to really polish his pick and roll game. So just being a little bit more patient, waiting on screens and using setups to be able to create the separation to get him downhill. Not that he really needs it, but it just makes him a little bit more efficient. I mean, he's good enough and he's skilled enough where even if he's not waiting on screens, he still can have an impact. But we just wanted to like polish that up and clean that up. Another area we focused on is to try to get him little nuances to try to get him to the line. I mean, he's a good free throw shooter percentage wise, but he didn't really take a lot of attempts. So that's been kind of the focus this year with looking at opportunities. We watch a lot of film on, you know, little areas where he can get bumps when he has an advantage over defender, slow down a little bit, you know, cause the defender to kind of run into him and still be able to finish plays, you know, at the rim. So those are probably the two main ones that, you know, we looked at this year. Obviously, he's been in and out of the lineup, and it was unfortunate here toward the end of the season. But, you know, that's something that we'll continue to focus on and, you know, try to improve upon because I think it helps us as a team as well.
Yeah, and I know this year, like, if you look at some of the numbers, the kind of three-point rate really took a little bit of a jump, and maybe some of the rim attempts dropped a little bit. Is that kind of something that you kind of leaned into because of the strength of that, you know, deep contested outside shooting, or was that kind of a little bit injury-related maybe because obviously he wasn't at full go with some of his ankle injuries at times coming back from the sprains?
It could be a combination of all that. We don't really – like focus on taking, you know, deep threes. He's instinctual when it comes to the shooting aspect, when it comes to reading the game. I mean, he's such a dynamic passer. Obviously his size helps him a ton to be able to deliver passes. So I think it's just a credit to him and his ability as a shooter that he's able to, he has a versatile kind of arsenal of how he shoots. He can shoot them off the catch. He can shoot it off the bounce. And I think another area that we would like to see him is to play off the ball because he can shoot him, you know, coming off screens, singles and staggers, if you will. He's really good in backside action, especially coming to his right hand. So that's another area that we can kind of look into get him more opportunities and more touches off the ball.
Yeah, and then just last question on LaMelo. His defense is something that I noticed really picked up this year compared to his first couple of years in the league. Just talk a little bit about kind of what areas specifically you see he's grown there, whether it's, you know, understanding coverages, communication, just, you know, ability to play through contact and screens. Where have you seen growth?
So part of it is that what you just said is just his commitment to, you know, that energy and that effort on a consistent basis, which I commend him for. He's been really good from that standpoint. And the conversations that we had is like, you know, it's not going to be perfect, but we just need you to be able to do your part. And you mentioned the one area that he's done, I think, a really good job is at least navigating screens. So he's not getting hit as much. We would like to see him. And who knows if it's even something that he can do, like more physical, getting into the ball and be the aggressor early. But if he's continuing to, you know, maneuver and navigate through screens and not get hit and is able to get back in front of the ball, I mean, that's going to be tremendous. There are opportunities where teams, they haven't really posted him a ton, but the ones that they have, he's done a really good job of, you know, staying in our scheme of reading. We call it red, where, you know, he's front of the post, just trying to challenge that catch. I have tons of clips that I've showed him with doing that. So just the engagement and the understanding that he has of wanting to improve in that area has helped us a ton, I believe.
So you mentioned the terminology that you guys use for LaMelo, like post defense, fronting the guys red. Mm-hmm. What, as an assistant coach who was here when Borrego was here as well and stayed on staff when Steve Clifford was hired, do you guys have to change your terminology a lot? Is it like kind of working with Coach Clifford to bridge the gap maybe?
You do. You know, certain coaches are used to certain terminology, and regardless of coach or not or whatever the terminology is, it's very important to all be on the same page. I mean, that's from top to bottom with the staff and the players amongst themselves. So it's really important that everybody's on the same page. You know, when a coach is watching film with another guy, he wants to be saying the same language that everyone else is saying, the players as well. So there's some small things. The NBA is kind of universal. You have like three different things that you can say for the same thing. It's just a matter of which one that you use. So it just takes some getting used to and, you know, some practice and everybody get on the same page. You know, everything is fine.
And then some fans might not know this necessarily, but assistant mm-hmm. coaches in the league tend to be like assigned to groups of players to work with developmentally. Kai mm-hmm. Jones is another one of the guys that you work with pretty closely. What areas of growth have you seen from him this year compared to his rookie season or the season before last?
So the biggest one is probably his evolution. And, you know, he's still working at it. He's doing a really good job of staying committed and diligent about the work. But just his feel and his touch around the rim, finishing around the rim and in the paint. So we do a lot there. The intriguing part about Kai is that we use him as a four and a five. So the part for him is knowing and being able to play both positions. So we do a lot of stuff, you know, from the five position. So getting comfortable with being in that dunker position and kind of working that low zone behind, you know, bigs that step up and help. I mean, obviously, he's very long and very athletic, so he's a lob threat in that area. But those opportunities when he can't get all the way there and jump over or duck on someone, he kind of has to have that little bit of finesse game and touch game to still be able to make plays around the rim. So we've been working a ton there. You know, when he's at the four, just his reads and spacing the floor, and on his drives, being able to have a counter move. He's very right-handed, but just try to open up his game to be able to get to his left as well. So he's not putting himself in a hole.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen him expand on that, like little mid-range, like fadeaways from the middle of the paint. He's hit a couple of those this year. And especially for somebody that has to go back and forth between the four and the five, defensively especially, is that more... So, like, that getting used to that role just takes experience and time, or is that something that you can kind of watch in the film room?
Well, it's both. It's watching film as well. You know, obviously with his ability to get downhill, we would prefer him to put I use the term pressure on the rim, and in a lot of ways that can be another area that we work on is his screening technique, his angles. But once he does get a good screen, is rolling, so he's putting pressure on the rim that way, whether it's a drop off to him to get a layup or a dunk, or it sucks in the defense to get us, you know, 3-point shots. And again, you mentioned to him being on at the four, when teams collapse and the ball is kicked to him, obviously playing the second side or being able to see a DHO that might be open working uphill, but there's also opportunities for him to drive a closeout. And those are the opportunities where, you know, we want him to put pressure on the rim and get to the rim, because when you look at the larger body of work when he's played in the G League, his percentage shooting at the rim is, I mean, it's really, really good. So that's kind of been the focus, is to don't settle, you know, try to get all the way there, get fouled. He's improved his free throw shooting percentage a lot this year. So it's an area that we'll continue to, you know, harp on.
So we're going to shift gears a little bit here, talk a little bit about the defense, especially over the last 18 games since February 1st, Charlotte are sixth in defense, which, I mean, I know this obviously season hasn't gone the way that anyone would have wanted it to do, and injuries have a large part to do with that. But you the staff and the players have to be a little bit proud about the kind of defensive surge that you've had in the last month or so here. Just what is it specifically that you think the team are doing so much better now in terms of executing, which has helped kind of lead to that improved defensive rating?
Well, first off, it's a kind of a simple answer. You know, we just finished our walkthrough for today's game, and I just think that guys are just putting a lot more into it as far as their approach and their mindset. You know, they're focusing and being locked in to the game plan, to, you know, the adjustments we want to make, the schemes that we want to have based on, you know, game by game, based on the team that we're facing. So that's one of the bigger areas, is the energy and our walkthroughs have been better. But specific to kind of basketball terms, our three-point defense has been much better. And that's a result of just our closeout game. Guys are closing out a little bit better, taking away airspace a little bit better, contesting a little bit better. Proper technique, which we harp on. Coach Cliff is big on the technique part of it. You know, we've been drilling that with what time that we do get. We don't get a lot of time to practice, but with what time we do get, we try to make sure we're drilling that. Our rim protection isn't great. You know, Mark, big guy around the rim. Nick has been really good. And obviously when Kai's at the five, that's helped our defense in our recent games here. Our pick and roll defense has been good. Our guys are talking early. And I was just looking at some numbers, and Terry and Dennis's, you know, numbers have been much better with getting into the ball, like getting over screens, and our bigs, you know, talking the coverage and communicating the coverage has been very, very helpful for us. And controlling the ball is probably one of the other areas that early in the year we were getting beat off the bounce off the first dribble, when guys are just, you know, taking on the challenge, taking pride in keeping the ball in front. So it's helping us keep the ball out of the paint, which doesn't stress our defense. We don't have to help as much.
I mean, it's pretty impressive to see that kind of improvement as well, because at the trade deadline, two veterans left the team. LaMelo is obviously hurt now. Mm-hmm. The guys that are there now, a lot of young players getting minutes. In the case of Bryce, really the first time he's ever gotten consistent rotation minutes in his career. Does it say a lot about those guys, like the ability that they've had, like, to step it up?
Like I said, it's a testament to those guys. Just, I mean, they have compete in them, and it was just a matter of, you know, coming in and locking into what we were wanting them to do and what's going to help the team. And, you know, they've accepted the challenge. So hopefully we can continue to use this as a step in the right direction and keep moving on the upward path defensively, because it's going to help us down the line.
For sure. And I know this year that the team has unfortunately, you know, suffered a lot of injuries, right? And I'm always curious, you hear some stories of players really like struggling with injuries, being away from the team. I mean, there was a big Greg Oden article recently, which was an interesting read, talking about his struggles when he was in Portland. What are some of the things that, like, the team or coaching staff kind of do to try and keep, like, injured players engaged if they're not around the team, to try to keep them part of that, like, team culture and ethos? Because that's something that I've read, you know, can be something that can be challenging when you're injured or not part of the team. Is there anything that you guys do just to try to keep people engaged?
Yeah, we keep the guys around as much as possible. We have a great medical staff, so they're close to us, and we see the guys when they are getting treatment. So it's opportunities for us to sit down and watch film with them. We're thinking up some creative ways, with Melo obviously not being able to play the rest of the season, of using maybe some of the playoff games to sit down and watch with him in areas where we could, you know, try to improve upon. It doesn't have to always be physical, but, you know, we can use some other areas. So that's one of the ways that we do try to just keep them engaged, is through film. Film is like our best friend, especially throughout the year with non-injured players, just because practice time is so limited. So, you know, what do you do with the low-minute guys that didn't play? So you got to be creative with that. So that's probably the biggest way, is through film. Just because they're not playing in a game, the coverages and the schemes that we're trying to do in a game doesn't change. So, like, for example, if I'm watching something with Melo, I can use Terry, I can use Dennis as an example, because it's the same position that they're playing, to be able to get the point across. So,
yeah. When you watch kind of some of the film, and you talk about some of the playoff film, are there particular teams or players you like to watch with LaMelo in terms of, or do you just kind of take a little bit from everywhere?
Yeah, it just depends. You know, it's a feel thing. Obviously, we don't know. Once these playoffs start, you know, you'll watch a game and you'll see how a game ended. And if it was a close game or overtime game, maybe those last few minutes are good ones. So we can kind of see how a team was manipulating a certain matchup or whatnot, or the patience that a team had and how they executed, slowed the game down, the pace of the game, pace of play. You just created with the areas that you want to focus on that particular day.
All right, Coach, we got one more question for you. We really appreciate you coming on here. So thank you for taking the time to be with us.
Awesome.
What is one thing that you're most looking forward to seeing, or something that you would like to see from the Hornets down the stretch run here? We've got almost exactly a month until the regular season closes.
Is that only that much left?
I think it's like April 15th, maybe, is when the first playoff game. So it's flown by, honestly.
Yeah, this season, this is one of those ones, you know, how when you get to this point, you feel like, oh, it was a drag. It was going slow. And then when you get to the end, it's like, wow, it flew by a little bit. But it feels like it's flown by throughout the whole time. I still remember us being at Summer League. But to answer your question, one of the biggest areas is probably our defensive rebounding and being able to finish possessions to really solidify the defense that we talked about. That's improved a ton, is being able to finish those possessions with a rebound, not allowing teams to have second possessions and second opportunities. Another area is just our rim and our paint decisions offensively. Like tonight, obviously Allen is out. But, you know, you got big guys like Mobley and some of these centers. You know, we tend to sometimes challenge these guys at the rim. So just our decisions when we get to the rim can kind of be better. Another area, probably getting to the free throw line. You know, if you look at the analytic numbers, it's like a 1.5-something possession this year, and you know, made free throws. So it's like the highest quality of shot that you can get. So the more of those we can get, obviously we got to convert and make them. We've had games where we didn't shoot a great percentage once we got there, but you know, obviously want to get there first and then, you know, knock those in. So I think those are areas that could really help us here down in the stretch.
Great. Well, Marlon, thanks a lot for coming on. Do you have any off-season vacation plans, anything booked in yet? Any off to any festivals, anything like that?
I'm kind of a homebody. I think there's a wedding that may come up. I might have to get to the Bahamas at some point.
You have to ask Kai for some tips, right? Kai will give you some tips there.
That's true. That's true. But most likely just be around Charlotte. This is a city that I love to be in. My kids and my wife, they still live in Atlanta. They stayed in Atlanta when I took the job here. So just looking forward to school year being over and they come to Charlotte. I'll just be around, you know, the gym, trying to get guys better, which is all really the vacation that I need.
Well, Marlon, thanks a lot for giving us so much of your time. We wish you best of luck with the rest of the season. Enjoy the Bahamas if you're able to get out there. And yeah, we'll look forward to catching up with you again in the future.
It's been a pleasure. Good meeting you guys.
Thank you.
Take care.